This is Audible.
The New Sugar Busters, Cut Sugar to Trim Fat, by H. Layton Stewart, Morrison C. Bethea, M.D., Sam S. Andrews, M.D., and Luis A. Ballard, M.D. Narrated by Dick Hill. Copyright 2003 by Sugar Busters, LLC. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with Ballantine Books, an imprint of the Random House Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2012 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Disclaimer: the information and advice presented in this book are not meant to substitute for the advice of your physician or other trained healthcare professionals. You are advised to consult with healthcare professionals with regard to all matters that may require medical attention or diagnosis, and to check with a physician before administering or undertaking any course of treatment or diet. Publisher's note: recipes and figures in this audiobook appear in a printable PDF, which has been included on the first audio and MP3 CD. If you downloaded this audiobook in a digital format, please visit our website at www.tantor.com and type Sugar Busters into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then click on PDF Extra 1. When prompted, enter the access code Healthy Eating to access the bonus material. Preface. Listeners may well ask why we have written a revised Sugar Busters. Do the recommendations for following the Sugar Busters lifestyle need changing? Has the Sugar Busters lifestyle turned out to be just another fad diet, as some critics asserted? Absolutely not. The lifestyle has proven to be solid, simple, successful, and most of all, healthful. This success has created the need to add many new chapters to expand on the benefits of this way of eating and living. 18 key new chapters include prevention, addressing weight and health problems, the epidemic of childhood obesity and what to do about it, exercise, to further emphasize this important aspect of healthy living, superfoods, to help make sure you consume some of the best, soft drinks, hard facts, to further alert you to this growing problem, and calculating fatness and obesity, to help determine how much you or your child is overweight. There are also chapters to give you a more in-depth understanding of the Sugar Busters lifestyle, including the glycemic index, reading labels, the plateaus, stocking and unstocking the pantry, lifetime meal plans, alternative sweeteners, to drink or not to drink, fat versus low-fat diets and products, and why Sugar Busters. We have included recipes from well-known restaurants in North America and around the world, so when you travel, you will know there are Sugar Busters-friendly restaurants in your path. These recipes can be found on your PDF companion. You will also hear, from the introduction onward, references to studies performed around the world that provide verification of the benefits of the various aspects of the Sugar Busters lifestyle. Because most diets are aimed at weight loss, they have historically recommended reducing calories and/or fat. This practice is unnatural to an affluent society, or even the Eskimos of North America. America is in dire need of a way of eating and drinking that will allow its people to consume reasonable quantities of food that can improve their daily enjoyment of life. At the same time, this new way of eating should eliminate unwanted quantities of weight and, more importantly, the adverse effects current eating habits have on blood cholesterol, triglycerides, and causing or negatively affecting diseases such as diabetes. Is a diet really needed to enhance everybody's health and performance? A large percentage of our population is faced with the daily decisions and stress levels that were afforded only to some of the country's top leaders just a few decades ago. In our lives today, at home and work and in between, we are faced with constant demands. Phone calls, faxes, computer problems and opportunities, high-speed, close-quarter traffic situations, and dawn-to-dawn media bombardments of local and worldwide murders, pestilence, catastrophes, and wars. So we all need to be ready to best handle the mental and physical demands each day presents, and a good lifestyle is the best way to prepare for the challenges. We authors are still excited and highly motivated to get this message out to benefit humankind. And humankind certainly is in need of some help in the area of eating habits. One author, a former Fortune 500 CEO, is in his 60s and slim. He has been eating the way this book recommends for over 9 years and is still 20 pounds down from his starting weight and has significantly improved his blood chemistry. All this at an average of over 3,100 calories a day. Our three doctor authors include a cardiovascular surgeon, an endocrinologist, and a gastroenterologist. These are not ordinary doctors. Our heart surgeon has been voted the number one cardiovascular surgeon in the greater New Orleans area by his peers, the most respected vote a doctor can receive. The endocrinologist is a member of the Audubon Internal Medicine Group at the largest hospital in New Orleans. Our gastroenterologist is chief of the gastroenterology section at the Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center in New Orleans and is an expert in liver function and metabolism and was invaluable in pointing out the connections between various hormonal secretions and the liver, where cholesterol is manufactured. Chapter 1. Introduction. Since Sugar Busters, Cut Sugar to Trim Fat, was first published in 1995, confirmations of the success and wisdom of this way of eating have continued to be documented in clinical studies, testimonials, and the nutritional literature. Large numbers of doctors all over the country are not only following the Sugar Busters lifestyle, but recommending it to their patients. Medical studies are proving that high-fiber, low-glycemic diets, like the Sugar Busters lifestyle recommends, are good for weight control and control of many medical maladies. The low-sugar, low-glycemic, high-fiber diet helps, or in some cases even prevents, problems such as obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, and many others that will be discussed later in this book. You may have heard the statistic that obesity has risen as much in the last 10 years as in the previous 4 decades combined. While we cannot prove or disprove these statistics, we do know that obesity is rising so rapidly that it is about to replace smoking as the number one killer in the United States. 10 years ago, smoking killed 430,000 people a year, and obesity killed 325,000 a year. Smoking-related death rates are going down, but obesity-related rates are still climbing. Fortunately, both smoking and becoming obese are lifestyle choices. All smokers can quit, and over 90% of obese or overweight individuals can better control their weight with just 2 steps. Finding a safe and easy way to accomplish that goal and giving it a shot. Pounds cannot be fought off. We will tell you how to lose weight and, just as important, how to keep it off. Unlike so many diets that put you through a crash phase or deprivation phase and then an adjusted phase, the Sugar Busters lifestyle gets you to start out like you can hold out. Yes, that you can maintain for the rest of your life. Since you will not be deprived of normal amounts of foods, this will be much easier than you might imagine. What is the secret that makes the Sugar Busters lifestyle so simple, easy, effective, and inexpensive? Let us boil all this down to its essence in one sentence. We are recommending that you eat like your ancestors ate, until very recently, because they ate zero refined sugar and only whole grain and unrefined foods. That is what Mother Nature provided. That is the eating plan that got us here. It was a high-fiber, low-glycemic diet that contained no refined sugar, discussed in Chapter 10. A little honey was available for the chiefs or royalty, or for those who braved the bees, but not for the general population of the time. Sugar and the sweet tastes of the day came from natural fruits and vegetables. What do anthropologists tell us about these ancestors of ours? They tell us that obesity, diabetes, and heart disease appear to have been quite rare. Remember that the number two killer, soon to be number one, at the dawn of the 21st century is obesity. What two diseases are strongly associated with obesity? You are right. Diabetes and heart disease. To further get you in the mood to absorb the way of eating recommended in this book, think about the following. Dr. Thomas Farley, chairman of the Department of Community Health Sciences at Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine, recently wrote that in the 40 years between 1958 and 1998, the number of Americans diagnosed with diabetes rose 600%. Of course, more people are being screened for diabetes today, but the increase in diabetes is still tremendous. According to the government, diabetes alone is costing the United States over $44 billion a year. That is hundreds of dollars apiece for the average taxpayer to treat something that, as you will discover, is largely preventable. In addition to diabetes, obesity can cause you who are obese and your obese children the following problems: heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, kidney failure, cancer, colon, breast, and prostate, gallstones, poor circulation, amputations, arthritis, pregnancy complications, menstrual irregularities, stress, incontinence, and depression. Diabetes can also lead to blindness. 30 years ago, following the 1972 Olympics, the country went on a fitness kick, and a larger percent of the population started exercising. This lasted about a decade. In that same decade, we were advised to shift to a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. We did, and the rate of obesity increased even more. As we will discuss later, when it comes to refined and processed foods, low fat is usually synonymous with high sugar. During the succeeding decades, according to government statistics, the consumption of fat has dropped about 16%, while the consumption of calories has remained about the same. Meanwhile, obesity has continued to climb. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, 65% of Americans are overweight, and 30.5% of us are obese. Obesity, not just overweight, is now claiming 15% of our children. What have been the most dramatic diet and lifestyle changes in the last 30 to 50 years? Tremendous rise in refined sugar consumption. Tremendous rise in low-fat foods, with, in most cases, fats being replaced with added sugars. Tremendous rise in carbohydrate intake as dietary fat and protein were cut. Significant decrease in physical activity. Tremendous rise in obesity and related illnesses. Tremendous rise in diabetes and related illnesses. Tremendous rise in individual dollars spent on pills, potions, and treatments. All of this, and still an insignificant amount of dollars are being spent on prevention. Hello? Anybody out there? We are astonished that the government and many nutrition professionals continue to recommend high-carbohydrate, low-fat diets. As you listen to this book, see if you don't believe the Sugar Busters lifestyle will cure many of these problems without pills or potions and their associated expenses. By the way, we do not consider Sugar Busters a low-carbohydrate lifestyle. It is simply a correct carbohydrate lifestyle. In our earlier 14-day meal plan, 40% of calories came from carbohydrate, and we have told people that they can probably maintain or even lose weight if they get up to 50% of calories from the low glycemic index carbohydrates. According to the chairman of the Department of Epidemiology at MD Anderson Hospital, the number one rated cancer research hospital in the United States, the high-fiber, low-glycemic index carbohydrates, like we recommend in our Sugar Busters books, are those that are high in antioxidants and are exactly what MD Anderson recommends that their patients should eat. Since the Sugar Busters way of eating is roughly 40% carbohydrates, 30% protein, and 30% fat, it is a balanced diet. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, a moderate-fat diet is most likely to be nutritionally adequate because it allows a healthy mix of foods from all food groups. This provides a balance that does not require supplements. Besides knowing that our digestive systems developed on a high-fiber, low-glycemic diet over the millennia, what makes the Sugar Busters lifestyle tick? Controlling, which in this case means lowering, our body's insulin requirement is the key to having our body lean and healthy. Today's sugary, highly processed foods cause a rapid rise in blood sugar, which immediately creates a big demand for the hormone insulin. Insulin is required to regulate the blood sugar level in your body. It does this by signaling the cells to be receptive to the storage of fats circulating in the blood. Almost any doctor in America will tell you that insulin is known as the fat storage hormone. Accordingly, if you consume foods that do not create this big need for insulin, you don't put the body in a fat storage mode. Neither do you subject the body to other problems caused by too much circulating insulin, as will be described further in Chapter 8. If you enjoy eating, this is a good news book. If you choose to eat out frequently, or if your employment requires it, this is a good news book. If you want your blood chemistry to improve while you continue to eat savory foods, this is a good news book. If you are diabetic, this is a good news book. If you want your children to grow up slim and healthy, this is a good news book. In addition to all these benefits, you will feel and function better in the process. We propose a way of eating that will allow you to eat most foods in normal quantities, possibly even in larger quantities than you presently consume. You can have 3 full meals a day and even appropriate snacks. If you want to eat 6 small meals or snacks, that's fine too. There will be only a few fruits and vegetables, plus products containing added sugars and highly processed grains, flours, that you cannot eat. These are the foods that require the secretion of large amounts of insulin to regulate your blood sugar. By simply avoiding these foods, you can get slimmer and healthier simultaneously. There are other books that recommend a much lower percentage of carbohydrate in one's diet. Many miss one of the most important factors in successful long-term weight loss, which is that only certain carbohydrates cause a dramatic increase in your body's need for insulin. Eliminating most carbohydrates in the diet means missing out on many of the very important vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and other nutrients that our bodies need to function properly. Is sugar toxic? Not inherently, but we say that refined sugar in large quantities is certainly harmful to many human bodies, particularly diabetics, and it helps make many people obese. Significant quantities of sugar are also derived in our digestive systems from carbohydrates in general, fruits, vegetables, and grains. But only certain of these sugars cause a strain on the health of our body, probably the mind, and certainly the waistline. Fructose, the sugar in fruit, normally will not hurt you, but eaten at the wrong time or in the wrong combinations can create digestive and sometimes metabolic problems. Therefore, what we are recommending is a low-sugar, low-glycemic diet that cannot be achieved by simply putting away your sugar canister. The essence of the Sugar Buster's lifestyle, which will be covered much more thoroughly in succeeding chapters, is that the only things you cannot eat on this diet are the carbohydrates that cause an intense insulin secretion. You must virtually eliminate white potatoes, white rice, bread from highly refined flour, corn products, beets, and of course all refined sugars, such as sucrose, table sugar, corn syrup, molasses, and honey. Also, sugared soft drinks and beer are not allowed. Beyond that, the list of foods allowed on the Sugar Buster's lifestyle is extensive and will delight you by its length and variety. Remember that all carbohydrates are broken down to glucose, sugar, in our body, and this raises our blood sugar level. Insulin is then secreted by the pancreas to lower our blood sugar, but too much insulin promotes the storage of fat, elevation of cholesterol levels, and possibly the deposition of plaque in our coronary arteries. Insulin also inhibits the breakdown of previously stored fat. Not fancy, but fact. The charts in Figure 1 on your PDF companion speak to this in a beautifully simple fashion. By the way, some people are insulin resistant and require large quantities of insulin to regulate their blood sugar level. We have found nothing good about high average levels of insulin in the body. Insulin not only causes the body to store excess sugar as fat, but inhibits the mobilization of previously stored fat, even if one is on a rather skimpy but high glucose generating diet. Insulin also can stimulate the liver to make more cholesterol. Now, you might accept the connection between insulin and overweight, but wonder about the link between insulin and cholesterol. Consider the experience of one of this book's authors. After beginning to eat steak, lamb chops, cheese, eggs, and so on for the first time in 15 years, and seeing his cholesterol drop 21% and triglycerides drop by 50%, he told his doctor and co-author that the only thing that seemed to make sense was that insulin must be causing the liver to make additional cholesterol, because the main difference his low-sugar, low-glycemic diet was causing was a lower daily average level of insulin circulating in his body. Our doctor paused about 3 seconds and said, "You know, you are right. When borderline diabetics get to where they cannot control their diabetes with pills, diet, and exercise, and we have to give them insulin injections, we know the first major side effect will be that their cholesterol will become elevated, and as the insulin shots continue, the type 2 diabetics also will start adding more fatty tissue." Our doctor immediately recognized a frequently overlooked connection between insulin and cholesterol. In addition, our endocrinologist and co-author verified that his type 2 diabetic patients that require insulin have significantly higher total cholesterol and triglycerides than the average population. Although we are in the 21st century, few appreciate the insulin-cholesterol connection. Fortunately, more and more are recognizing the link every day. Many of our friends or patients who have gone on our low-glycemic, low-sugar lifestyle have written to us that they had lowered their cholesterol by an average of 15% without either exercise or pills. How could they have increased their fat intake and seen their cholesterol, triglyceride, and weight levels fall? It is the effect of lower average levels of insulin in their blood. Sound too simple? Well, it really is simple. But it's important to understand why the Sugar Busters lifestyle works. Once you do, you will be confident it is not another gimmicky diet, which means you will be more likely to follow its guidelines and enjoy the maximum benefits. So please, don't just jump to Chapter 9, start the diet, and then not be able to tell anybody why you lost the weight and how you got that spring back in your step. Learn how it works, and you'll better understand the benefits and enjoyment it can bring you for life. Most probably, a longer and healthier life. Calories are not the only answer to weight gain or loss. Lavoisier first used the term calorie in the 1840s. Subsequently, in the 20th century, a caloric theory developed that explained weight gain or loss. Although this theory was later declared flawed by the authors, nutritionists ignored this correction. We have been misled for decades by peddlers of the calorie in, calorie out theory, who either did not know better or had other obvious motives. The scientific data have been available in America for years, waiting for a logical researcher to come to this same conclusion. Americans alone spend $32 billion a year trying to lose weight, an additional $46 billion on medical costs directly related to problems caused by obesity, and $23 billion on the time lost while away from the workplace because of the same problems. Unfortunately, for some, this is an incentive to ignore a way of eating that creates no profits. So get ready. You have a lot of misinformation, misconceptions, and propaganda to overcome. What motivates three doctors to tell you about something that will cost you only a few additional dollars each year on your grocery bill and save you the expense and time of going so often to the doctor's office? The effects of a low glycemic diet will actually take patients away from many doctors. But doctors are in the business of saving lives. The message in this book can prolong lives and significantly improve the quality of life. What's wrong with losing weight in other ways? Some diets are, in essence, partial starvation, depleting the body of essential proteins, vitamins, and minerals, and making you miserable by depriving you of normal quantities of food. Of course, a whole industry is built on providing, at a price, vitamins and supplements in any quantity you might conceivably want. But did you ever taste a pill you really liked? Instead of having to swallow a pill, why not eat a plateful of savory fruits, vegetables, and meats, and lose weight in the process? What a waste of money to spend billions of dollars a year trying to lose weight. We'll tell you how to replace the most notorious insulin-stimulating carbohydrates with wholesome foods that you can buy at nearly any grocery store. Watch out at the grocery store, however. Manufacturers have added some form of refined sugar to most packaged products, even foods like chili, because they know that if it does not have a sweet flavor, it may not compete well with other brands. We have harped on insulin's bad effects, but we will now describe the benefits of another of the body's secretions. Glucagon, also shown in Figure 1 on your PDF companion, is released from the pancreas into the bloodstream in significant quantities following the consumption of a protein-rich meal. Glucagon helps promote the mobilization of previously stored fat. So, as you burn food reserves for your energy requirements between meals, high levels of glucagons will help allow that energy to be derived from that spare tire around your waist. The glucagon chart also shows that Once the glucagon level is raised, it will remain elevated for quite some time so you can keep on burning that mobilized fat. Remember, insulin inhibits the mobilization of previously stored fat. Because a high-protein meal does not stimulate significant amounts of insulin secretion, the fat mobilization inhibitor is not present, but a high level of glucagon, the fat mobilizer, is present. The chart in Figure 1 also shows that carbohydrate-rich meals actually suppress glucagon secretion. So the stored fat mobilizer is absent, but the hormone to promote storage, insulin, is present in significant amounts. When fat gets stored, we all know where it goes. Ready for more good news? Following the pattern of eating we recommend can greatly relieve many common stomach maladies. One of this book's authors went from Rolaids or Alka-Seltzer twice a week to none after beginning to eat steak, lamb chops, cheese, and eggs for the first time in 15 years. The only other alteration beyond a low-sugar, low-glycemic diet that he made was the substitution of red wine for other alcoholic beverages he used to consume. To drink or not to drink? You can find arguments both ways, but we believe, as do most American doctors, that if you consume modest amounts of alcoholic beverages, it will help raise your HDL, or good cholesterol, and that the alcoholic beverage that benefits you most is red wine. Populations in countries with a higher relative consumption of red wine to other spirits definitely experience a lower incidence of cardiovascular disease. Researchers believe it is primarily the polyphenols, including flavonoids, in red wine that provide the cardiovascular benefits. Refer to Chapter 25. One thing is for certain, alcohol itself has calories, so consuming it does not help you lose weight. However, with reasonably comfortable adjustments in eating habits, significant quantities of weight can be lost even if you continue to drink modest amounts of alcohol, such as red wine. How about exercise? Exercise is a definite plus in overall body fitness and health, especially if done regularly and in moderate amounts, discussed in Chapter 17. Nevertheless, a moderate amount of exercise will not significantly affect weight loss if you continue to eat foods that create a constant need for high levels of insulin in your bloodstream. One of this book's authors lost 20 pounds and has kept it off for almost 10 years. He's not proud that he does not take the time to exercise, but the fact is that he doesn't. So the 20-pound weight loss did not come from exercise or a low-calorie diet. It came from a low-glycemic, low-sugar, high-fiber diet. He is not necessarily an example we want you to imitate. We definitely believe exercise is good for you. In combination with the lifestyle we recommend, it should help achieve a general improvement in body weight control and overall health. One word of caution. If you are a marathon runner or an exercise fanatic, this diet may not be exactly right for you. High levels of exercise require foods that generate large quantities of glucose to fuel your engine. But research is showing that it is the low glycemic index carbs that provide the best endurance capacity. Does every person's body react to and process, metabolize, foods in exactly the same way? No. But understanding the messages in this book will help you understand not only why these differences exist, but also what you can do to positively influence your own body's reaction to various foods and combinations of foods. Some women have found it more difficult than men to lose weight on any diet. This can be explained in part by the fact that a female's metabolic rate on an age-adjusted basis is usually 5 to 10% lower than that of a male. This makes it easier to put on weight and more difficult to lose weight. Hormonal influences present in both premenopausal and postmenopausal women also may be responsible for difficulties in losing weight. Hormone therapy, in the form of either birth control pills or estrogen and synthetic progesterone supplements, may further aggravate this problem. Chapter 16 addresses in more detail the problems some women have experienced with weight loss because of hormonal intake. Also, please be aware that even some of the most common over-the-counter preparations can cause fluid retention, increased appetite, and other changes that can lead to weight gain. However, all individuals, especially women, should be cautious about taking or discontinuing any type of medication without prior consultation with their physicians. How about fat burner supplements that are supposed to boost your metabolism even in the absence of exercise? According to the Tufts University Health and Nutrition Letter of May 2002, almost all contain ephedra, which can increase your metabolism but can also cause irregular heartbeat, high blood pressure, chest pain, and even stroke, heart attack, seizures, and death. Ephedra is marketed as a dietary supplement rather than a drug, and supplements are not regulated, unlike prescription drugs, so buyer beware. Chapter 2. The Glycemic Index. The glycemic index, GI, is a measure of how much a specific amount of ingested carbohydrate, usually 50 grams, will cause a person's blood sugar to rise and remain elevated over time relative to the effect on blood sugar of the same amount of pure glucose, which is assigned a GI of 100. To determine a food's glycemic index, the food and glucose are consumed on separate days. Blood samples are taken under supervised conditions, and the results are measured in a laboratory. The measurements are precise and scientifically straightforward. To allow for metabolic variation within a given individual, the testing is repeated at least once on different days. To allow for the natural variation in metabolic reaction between individuals, the glycemic index testing is usually done on at least 12 individuals and then averaged to come up with the final number. Might the final number vary somewhat for different groups of 12 people? It probably would, slightly. Might the ethnic background and historical dietary environment of different people cause a variation? It probably would. In the future, as more GI responses are measured on many more people, the GIs that fit your group will become more accurate. All that said, the relative GIs as published today are still good indicators of how a given amount of a specific food will affect your blood sugar and also the amount of insulin required to bring your blood sugar back to normal. One factor that causes variation in GI results is that different variants of the same type of fruit, grain, or vegetable can cause, in some instances, fairly large differences in the glycemic reaction. For instance, sweet corn from New Zealand has been measured to have a GI of 48, while sweet corn from an American grocery store has been measured to have a GI of 60. Similarly, an orange bought in Denmark has a GI of 31, while an orange bought in Canada measures 51. Variation can also occur in the GI measurement of individual foods of the same type grown within the continental United States. Also, the ripeness of fruit can cause variation. Ripe bananas have a higher GI than less ripe, greenish bananas. We feel that a very important determinant of the glycemic index is the particle size and form in which a carbohydrate comes packaged by nature. Cracked grains produce a lower glycemic index than coarse flour, which in turn produces a lower glycemic index than finely milled flour. See Figure 2 on your PDF companion. The lowest glycemic indexes are associated with the whole grains. It is no surprise that whole or cracked grains produce the lowest insulin response. When whole, rolled, or finely milled oats, oatmeal, are compared, the whole oats have the lowest glycemic index. While particle size significantly affects the glycemic index, data show that the form of the carbohydrate also contributes to glycemic differences. For example, when starches are cooked, they become gelatinized. The particles or granules swell because of the heat and water absorbed during cooking. This leads to a rupture of the granule, exposing the individual starch molecules, thus increasing the susceptibility of the starch to enzymatic digestion. This leads to a more rapid absorption through the walls of the small intestine. When a carbohydrate is absorbed quickly, it stimulates more insulin than the same amount of a more slowly absorbed carbohydrate. Medical studies have shown that processing wheat products leads to a higher glycemic index for these foods. Modern food processing may include puffing, thermal extrusion, intense mechanical treatments, and canning, all of which alter the foods to a considerable degree. Generally, products with the least degree of processing have the lowest glycemic index. Therefore, the more processing a carbohydrate such as rice, corn, or wheat has been subjected to, the higher its glycemic index. An interesting and useful point is that the addition of vinegar or even lemon or lime juice has been reported to lower the glycemic effect of a meal. People who have access to a glucose monitor can determine their approximate glycemic reaction to a specific food by testing themselves after fasting and then testing themselves after eating the food. Bottom line, we believe that choosing foods based on their relative GIs is a very valuable way to help select the foods that will help you control your weight and also provide you with the vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and other nutrients that you need for optimum health. We are not alone in this view. Dr. David S. Ludwig of Harvard, director of the obesity program at Children's Hospital in Boston, maintains that the GI has value in helping people choose a healthful diet. He cautions, however, as we do, that you also need to take into account how much of a particular food you eat. Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of nutrition at Tufts University, says, "I am personally convinced that low GI diets help people lose weight." And GI researcher Dr. Christine L. Pelkman of Pennsylvania State University says, "We're learning that the type of carbs you eat really makes a difference in your health, and that the glycemic index helps you choose the best carbs for you." Dr. Christian Northrup, author of an excellent book titled The Wisdom of Menopause, writes favorably about the application of the glycemic index for choosing the proper foods. In her book, she lists Sugar Busters as one of the few books on diet or lifestyle that she recommends you read and follow for a healthy diet. We consume large quantities of some carbohydrates in an average serving size and small quantities of other carbohydrates. We alluded to the powerful blood sugar-raising impact of eating a baked white potato in our earlier book. An average-sized baked white potato weighs around 8 ounces. Since a white potato is approximately 35% carbohydrate, that calculates to about 80 grams of carbohydrate with a very high GI of 95. If you want to compare the potato's blood sugar-stimulating effect relative to table sugar, which has a GI of 65, you find that it would take 118 grams of sugar to have the same impact as the potato. That is 29.5 teaspoons of sugar. A 6-ounce potato calculates to 22 teaspoons, and a 10-ounce potato to 37 teaspoons of sugar. If you still decide to eat a white potato, please eat the skin, which contains nearly all the potato's fiber and many of its nutrients. For an excellent substitution for a white potato, a 1-cup serving of cooked lentils with a GI of only 28 results in an impact of only 4 1/3 teaspoons of table sugar. The glycemic response for most dried beans would be similar, although somewhat higher. Do not be afraid of getting some sugar through your carbohydrates, however. That is where you get your energy. The problem simply lies in the fact that a serving of a high glycemic index food can give you so much sugar and potential energy that a lot can be left over to turn to fat. By the way, the critics were right. A carrot, albeit with a high GI, is 93% water and only 7% carbohydrate. So a carrot eaten in normal quantities will not give you a large blood sugar stimulating reaction despite its high GI. So enjoy the nutritive benefits of modest portions of carrots from time to time. Harvard has proposed measuring foods by their glycemic load, GL. It is measured simply by multiplying the grams of carbohydrates in an average-sized serving of a given food times the GI of that same food. It is reasonable, logical, and we support it as another useful tool in the glycemic approach to choosing the right carbohydrates to eat. Sometime in the future, we predict, GIs and GLs for overall meals will be widely available for a broad range of foods and can further help you in planning and selecting your meals. One more time, regarding the consumption of so much refined table sugar. There are no vitamins, minerals, trace elements, or fiber in table sugar, only empty calories. Grains, breads, and cereals. It is very difficult to find breakfast cereals that are processed without the addition of one or more sugars. Some cereal flakes are even sugar-coated. We recommend whole grain breads that have the intact or cracked kernel as much as possible. The higher the percentage, 50% or more, the better. Another problem is found in breads that contain enriched flour. This means the grain initially has been so highly processed that even the vitamins and minerals have been stripped out and must be replaced. Enriched. Read the labels closely and go with those that have very little or no added sugar, the highest fiber or bran content, and the least processing of the grains. Also, avoid corn-based cereals. Of the pastas, stone-ground whole grain pasta would be the best. Next best would be a coarse stone-ground whole wheat pasta. See Figure 3 on your PDF companion for a table showing the glycemic index of various grains. Vegetables. Most vegetables are very good in providing much of the natural carbohydrates we definitely should include in our daily diets. A few, however, do stimulate excessive insulin secretion and should be avoided. See Figure 3 on your PDF companion for a table showing the glycemic index of different vegetables. For a more complete listing of the acceptable vegetables, please refer to Figure 9 on your PDF companion. Fruits. Fruits are a great source of sugar because they generally have a moderate to low insulin stimulating effect and also provide vitamins necessary to good health. As explained, however, fruits are handled best by our digestive system if consumed alone. Fruit juices generally have a modestly higher glycemic index than the whole fruit itself. See Figure 3 on your PDF companion for a table showing the glycemic index of several common fruits. Dairy products. Dairy products also provide many of the vitamins necessary to good health. Furthermore, except for dairy products with added sugar, they all possess a moderate to low insulin-stimulating effect. But please, don't overdo the amount of saturated fat consumed through dairy products. See Figure 3 on your PDF companion for a table of the glycemic index of some common dairy foods. Miscellaneous. See Figure 3 on your PDF companion for a table showing the glycemic index of some miscellaneous other common foods. Recently, Harvard Medical School's Harvard Heart Letter reported that the World Health Organization and the National Institute of Medicine favor use of the glycemic index in choosing healthy foods. Sugar Busters first made that recommendation in 1995. Chapter 3. A Brief History of Refined Sugar. In all the eons over which our digestive systems were evolving, the world simply did not have refined sugar or refined high glycemic carbohydrates. Yet our ancestors thrived, even though they lived in harsh physical conditions. In some places, a little honey or sugarcane might have been available occasionally, but most of the world's inhabitants had no refined sugar at all, not in all those hundreds of thousands of years. Early on, our ancestors did not even have the luxury of being able to eat a combination of foods. They ate like all animals eat today, unless we force our pets to eat otherwise, only one thing at a time, and that was in a completely unrefined form. They did not eat the kind of carbohydrates that would require large amounts of insulin secretion. The staples of our diet today, white bread, white rice, white potatoes, refined flours, refined sugars, hybridized fruits and vegetables, and soft drinks were not available. For hundreds of millennia, our ancestors ate only a low-glycemic diet. Back then, the pancreas was probably not called upon to secrete as much insulin in any one day of an entire lifetime as it is called upon to secrete nearly every day of our modern post-infant lifetime. For a visual example of how we have come in just the last 15 centuries from zero refined sugar intake to today's average daily consumption of refined sugar alone, see Figure 4 on your PDF companion. Think of how much more glucose, sugar, is generated with the carbohydrate and starch combinations of our balanced American diet, like a baked white potato, that does not ever get picked up in the comparative statistics. We have had refined sugar only for a mere blink of time in humans' digestive evolution. Think about it. Refined sugar and refined flour are new foods. Is it any wonder that the incidence of diabetes and impaired glucose tolerance continues to get higher and higher? Maybe we eat too much sugar and simply wear out or exhaust our pancreas glands, which surely did not evolve to produce the quantities of insulin a typical modern diet demands. Refined sugar did not exist anywhere in the world until around AD 500. The old holy books of the world's leading religions do not even mention sugar. Honey, yes. Sugar, no. The early writers and historians did not have a word for it. If they had, they surely would have mentioned it prominently, as every society introduced to refined sugar has been immediately hooked on its delights and, unfortunately, also on its ill effects. Consider a little history on three of the high glycemic index foods that were not available to our ancestors. White potatoes are native to South America and were not discovered by Europeans until 1537. White rice was not introduced to Western civilization until around 600 A.D. White bread was not common until around 1875, when the steel roller mill was invented. Potatoes and rice are not mentioned in the Bible either. In 1647, a physician named Thomas Willis wrote of his observation on diabetes and on some of the negative effects of sugar. He was one of the few to do so. In the 20th century, more attempts were made, with little effect,
at alerting the world to the dangers of this refined substance.
In 1976, William Duffy wrote Sugar Blues,
which he said was inspired by the late actress Gloria Swanson, who recognized sugar's poisonous effects on both her mind and body. Miss Swanson suffered from depression until she eliminated refined sugar from her diet.
Duffy's research,
which summarized the observations of earlier writers on sugar,